loving, caring, compassionate people I think I've ever met. Sometimes I share about some stuff that's like really, really close to my heart. It like really, really pulls on my heartstrings. But I have found that there's healing in the feelings, and that's what this program's all about. We've been to meetings and we've sat and listened to the Danish share and just for today and all the readings. And you don't have to know the language, because this is the program of feeling. To listen to the passion, and when someone shares and they're sharing some pain, I know what that pain is about. I know what that feels like. So I don't have to understand the language. So I'm here to share some feelings with the Danish tonight, this afternoon. And thank you for inviting me. And my wife. If you were able to be here last night and hear my wife share last night, she shares a passionate story about so openly and giving and from the heart. Thank you. I brought a piece of literature to kind of share. I don't know if any of you guys have ever seen one of these. This is the first edition basic text. This book is a commemorative edition. It was numbered 2,500 of them. It was written to produce and print the first edition blue book. I don't like to leave it at home. When I go somewhere, I like to share it. Let other members see it. I know you guys just recently got your basic text. Thank God for Narcotics Anonymous. Guys, just recently last year celebrated 20 years as a fellowship in Narcotics Anonymous. I know the last year you guys were seated at the World Conference. Amazing. Amazing. Established community of Narcotics Anonymous. I come from the West Coast of California. Some people call it the motherland of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm proud, very, very proud to be part of that fellowship and be there where all this took place many, many years ago. I wasn't there when it happened. You know, this is the first time in my whole life I've ever been clean. But I'm very proud to be a part of that and be able to experience a lot of things that the old stuff that took place. And you guys are new, and you get to experience the new stuff and make it happen in your own country. And that's amazing all in itself. You know, I enjoy coming to some of these conventions and being very intimate and you know, talking, getting the opportunity to talk to everybody and see everybody, maybe eat a meal with everybody and visit and communicate with everybody. And some of these conventions you go to, if you go to our regional convention, 2 years ago, the Saturday night meeting had 10,000 people at that meeting. That's a little overwhelming, even for me. Even for me, it's a little overwhelming. But you come here and you get to meet everybody. I sat out there and about 15 people came up to me and asked me, "Are you nervous?" You know, I'm trying not to think about it. You know? Stop asking me that. I'm trying to stay out of my head because I get in my head and I get it all twisted up inside my head. So I just got to stay calm. Me and Lars got prayed up before we came out here and invited power into this process. Because it's definitely not about me. It's about a power that I believe in, that's in my life today, and I definitely work the third step a lot. I turn my will and my life over to that power a lot of times, you know. Like I said, this is the first time in my whole life I've ever been clean. I did not know that addicts recovered from the disease of addiction. And before I chair a meeting or do a lot of stuff in Narcotics Anonymous, there's one little passion. Like I said, this book was written in 1981, first edition basic text. On page 59 of this book, it talks about what our message is. It's out of the fifth tradition. What is our message? That an addict, any addict, can stop using, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Our message is hope. Our promise is freedom. When it's all said and done, our primary purpose is to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. And that's all we have to give. That's all we have to give. First time in my whole life I've ever been clean. I say it a lot, man, because someone asked me how many years clean I had. All I've been clean in our guys' house, and I told them, I said, and they said, that's amazing. I said, you got to be standing in these shoes to see it, man. It is truly amazing to stay clean. Is there anybody here with 30 days or less? Anybody has 30 days clean or less? Keep coming back. The lifeblood of this program, the newcomer. I come from a home group. My home group is the Pit. We meet on Thursday night at 8 o'clock, 30 Kirk Road in San Jose up on the east side there. We have a very, very strong home group. Very strong home group. You come in on a Thursday night. A couple of weeks ago, we had 250 members at that home group. Most of them newcomers. There's probably 100 regularly attending home group members that attend that meeting, and everybody else is usually first timers and newcomers. So, what that means, not only, I mean, it's a big meeting, but what that means is it creates an atmosphere of recovery that people are attracted to. The newcomer likes to come there, they feel welcome. We have pastries at our home group. You know, we have somebody that donates pastries to the home group, and maybe they come for that, and hopefully they come for the recovery that's there. But it's a very warm and welcoming meeting. Very proud of that meeting. It's one of the oldest meetings in the world. It's one of the oldest ongoing meetings in the world. We're very fortunate to be part of that fellowship, to have that history there. You know, as we speak right here, our history is dying. Our hair, you know, all the struggles and all that stuff and the history of Narcotics Anonymous is dying as we sit right here today. And it's important that we save that we write it down and we keep everything. I'm a big collector of stuff, man. Anything that takes place in my region, my area, whatever, flyers, events and all that stuff, I collect all that stuff. And I've been able to collect some stuff like this book right here. Like this basic text right here. There was 2,500 of them written. Probably right now there's probably about only 1,800 of them left in existence. And this is book number 849. So it's important that we collect that stuff and keep it. And so when the newcomer wants to find out about it, he can. You know, I believe it's important to know. If I want to be a part of this thing know where to be a part of taking it someplace and furthering the Narcotics Anonymous, I need to know where it came from. You know, if you're into sports and football and like in the United States and you know the San Francisco 49ers, you know who the owner of that is, you know what his wife's name is, you know what they have for dinner, you know what kind of car they drive, all that stuff. But a lot of times you go to meet Narcotics Anonymous and you ask who Jimmy Kennan is and they're like, they don't know. I believe it's important. I believe it's important for me to know. So I've like searched out a lot of that stuff, and you know I've been able to go down to Los Angeles to go to some of the places where some of the first meetings took place, to the World Service Office there in Chatsworth, California, and be a part of that. It's important to me. You know, like I said, this is the first time in my whole life I've ever been clean. I did not know that addicts recover from this disease. I believed in that thing. You know, once an addict, always an addict. Once a dope fiend, always a dope fiend. Once a convict, always a convict. And there was no changing that. That's just the way it is. And I have a lot of experience to prove that to be true in my life. A lot of experience. I did not have the experience to show that women got their kids back once they lost them. That families maintained the unit, the family unit, and stayed in places and paid rent and bought baby diapers and formula and all that stuff. Did not see, that was not my experience. I come from a place of hopelessness. I come from a place of degradation, humility. And the experience that I had came from a handball court, a weight pile, the domino table, pinochle table. I don't know if you guys play those types of things in prisons around this in Denmark, but that was the experience in the Sherman forms that I participated in and got that information from and applied that stuff in my life and tried to take that into the free world and apply it out there, and it just never worked, and I always got the same results. So I always ended up in those places. Didn't know that Narcotics Anonymous exists. My clean date is June 21st, 1992. My original clean date. I've been able to keep that clean date since I got here. It has not changed. I love June 21st, 1992.
Yeah.
It was actually Father's Day. The day that I got clean was actually Father's Day. June 21st, 1992 was Father's Day. And it wasn't like I got up that morning and said, you know what, I've been using for a long period of time. It's a good day to get clean. I think I'll go to one of the Narcotics Anonymous meetings. That's not what was happening on June 21st, 1992. What was happening June 21st, 1992 on Father's Day? I should have been sitting at home and my two daughters and maybe wife in the back room cooking me a nice Father's Day dinner, sitting there watching my 50-inch plasma TV with a little coffee table with some presents sitting right there, maybe a shirt and a tie, maybe a wallet or something, one of the little gifts that you get for Father's Day. That's not how I was spending my Father's Day. I was out trying to get some more. I was out stealing, trying to get some money to get some more, and got caught once again. So, and that happened many, many times, man. I cannot put the two together. Stop using, stop going to jail. Stop using, stop going to jail. That was like foreign stuff to me, man. I could not put that together. I could not put it together. It didn't work in my head. I had to use, so I was going to continue to go to those places. And if you hear back from a relapse, if relapse is part of your story, welcome back to Narcotics Anonymous. Welcome back to Narcotics Anonymous. I can only, you know, we used to have a meeting in San Jose, it was called Relapse and Recovery, and to be able to share at that meeting, to be the speaker at that meeting, you had to have some relapse, you had to talk about relapse, you had to talk about your relapse. I used to go and sit in the front row every Sunday at 7:30 to that meeting. It finally stopped happening a few years back, but all the time that my first 16 years of being clean, I used to go to that meeting on Sunday night, sit in the front row, and listen to what those people talked about relapse. That was important shit to me. I needed to know what caused an addict to go back and use. I needed to know why an addict would get this wonderful, wonderful, God-given gift of recovery and then go and decide to use and give it back. Give the gift back. Why does that happen? What causes that? And I'd sit in that front row. I wish I had a piece of paper and a little chart and sit there and chart everything that was said during those meetings. Because every meeting, those people would get up and share about the relapse. They said, well, you know, I had 10 years clean and I stopped going to meetings. And I used, oh, there, stop going to meetings. I need to write that down. Remember that? You know, stop calling my sponsor. Oh, just call the sponsor. I need to remember that. You know, stop working the step. Oh, that's, got to work some steps, man, to stay here and stay clean. And all that stuff, man. I wish I would have had a check mark by every time they said that for a relapse. I'd have check marks up and down that piece of paper, man. So I honed in on that. When somebody talked about relapse, I scooted to the edge of my chair and like got real close and listened to what they had to say. Never once did they say that they went to too many meetings and got loaded. You can't call your sponsor too many times and get high. It doesn't work that way. So what I have found is what I need to continue to do is what got me here in the first place. You know, I'm a product of a recovery house. I went to that little house and they just saturated me with 12-step stuff. And I got to choose from that where I fit in. You know, we need to be where we fit in. And I fit into Narcotics Anonymous. I chose Narcotics Anonymous and I have not deviated from Narcotics. I'm one of those addicts that believe there's only one fellowship. There's only one program. There's only one message. And that's Narcotics Anonymous. Sometimes it takes me a little while to get going here, but I'll get into this thing here. So, you're having that attitude, and if I was to tell you that I had to go to some other stuff to help me stay clean, I would be telling you that Narcotics Anonymous is not good enough. I would be telling you that it doesn't work. I know Narcotics Anonymous works. I know it's good enough. I see a lot of examples in this room today that Narcotics Anonymous works for addicts to stay clean and recover from the disease of addiction and become some pretty decent people now. Become some caring, loving, compassionate people. Thank you, Denmark, for inviting me here. I remember when Lars emailed me and said that, because of the time difference, I get up really, really early. I get up like 4 o'clock, 4:30 in the morning over there. So like it's like nighttime over here, I guess, pretty close to that. And I got the email from Lars that says, you're being considered to be one of the speakers at our regional convention. And I ran into the bedroom and woke my wife up. My wife don't get up at 4:30 in the morning, but I got it up there. I said, you got to see this, man. I think they sent this to the wrong person. I about fell out of the chair, and I emailed Lars back, and I said, I am so honored to be even considered, but I know there's another person in the running for this to do this, and I'm just so honored to even be thought of. And then he said, well, it hadn't been decided yet, and I'll let you know on the 18th, I believe it was, or something like that, when the committee met again. And he emailed me back and says, you are going to be the Saturday night speaker. That's exactly, I just stood at the computer screen and tears came down my cheeks. And I went and woke up my wife again. I said, not only am I the Saturday, but you're Friday night. Thank you, Denmark. I don't know why that happens to you. I don't know why. I guess the only way I can explain it is like, have you ever felt like God just kind of like puts his arms around you and put this shroud around you and just like hug you and it just feels so good and everything's just so perfect that you want to just cry? That's happened to me many times in my recovery. And I've gotten to the point where I'm pretty much okay with it. I got a friend named John A. that shares about, he said, and I've said it more than 3 times, so I guess it's my stuff too. I guess I can say it. I guess that's the rule here in Narcotics Anonymous. If you use someone else's stuff more than 3 times, it's yours. But I heard him say one time, if it makes you uncomfortable to see me get emotional up here, you got to see it from up here. Yeah. I used to see men get up here and get emotional and talk about some stuff that was really hard, heartfelt, and get emotional. I think, oh my God, that must be painful. That must really hurt to be able to stand up there in front of a room of people and shed tears in front of people. And then it happened to me. And I think what happens is, see, the desperation that I experienced, and the literature talks about, you know, in desperation, we sought help from the other members of Narcotics Anonymous. And I remember that desperation. I was desperate when I got here. And I was done, through, tore up from the floor up, had no place else to go. And you guys welcomed me into Narcotics Anonymous, even as desperate I was, man. So from that desperation sprang a whole lot of things, man. Like my gratitude for Narcotics Anonymous. I am a grateful, grateful addict. Grateful member of Narcotics Anonymous. And when I get to that place in gratitude, and a lot of times it has to do with how spiritually fit, you know, how many meetings I've gone to, and it seems like my recovery is like full, and I talk about some of that stuff, man, it just tears me up. Because I remember what it was like the last days of using. I remember what it was like that Father's Day out there trying to get something together so I can get some more. I remember what it was like sitting at that bus stop bench when that guy come up there and he'd have his hand in his pocket. He'd be like this, and I'd be sitting there like this, and I had to have $40 to get what he had in his pocket in his hand, and I only had like $36.42. You know, and I was short. You know. And he called me all kinds of names. He said, "You're sorry, man. You were $4 short yesterday. I shouldn't give this to see what I got in my pocket, man. You're disgusting. You haven't brushed your teeth in probably 2 weeks. You haven't taken a shower in longer than that. Look at your clothes, man. You're a disgusting dope fiend, man. I should just turn around and watch." And I'd sit there and listen to that. Accept that. Let someone talk to me like that. Because I wondered what he had in his pocket. And make all kinds of promises. Well, I'll go over here to the liquor store and get you. What do you drink? What do you smoke? I'll get you whatever you want. I'll go steal it right now to make up what I owe you. And he'd just look at me and say, "You're disgusting, man." And I would accept that. And then we'd do the transaction thing, and he'd drive off in his nice new car. And, "You motherfucker, man. Don't ever talk to me like that, man. Don't you know who you're talking to, man? Don't ever talk to me like that. Next time." I believe that June 21st, 1992, when I made the decision to try and do something different in my life, that a room full of addicts just like this at the end of the meeting, I truly believe in that moment of silence at the end of the meeting before we say the surrender prayer and pray out. June 21st, 1992, there was a room of addicts that stood at the end of the meeting and held hands and put their arms around each other's shoulders. And at that moment of silence, they prayed for the addict that was still suffering. And they probably prayed for me many, many times, but that window of opportunity had never opened up for me. But for some reason, June 21st, 1992, I was ready to hear it. And when they prayed, they were praying for me. They prayed me into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And that window of opportunity opened up. And I stepped through it. Did not know it at the time, but that's what was happening in my life. You guys prayed, continued to pray for me. And I walked through that window of opportunity. Doors started to open. You hear about one door closed, another door opens. You know, I went to a little place and I heard a little bit more about Narcotics Anonymous, and I heard this man share, George B., and I wondered what he had, because I heard that what he had, he got by working the steps, so I wanted to work the steps the way George B. had worked the steps. So I went up to him after that meeting, and I asked him, "George, I want what you have, man, and I heard that the only way that I can get that is to work the steps the way you've worked the steps, so please sponsor me and show me how to work the steps the way you have, because I want what you have. I don't want to continue to do what I've been doing." And he looked at me, you know, we're a gentler, kinder fellowship today. We're, you know, "Don't upset the newcomer, be careful. Don't say that about the newcomer. Don't let, you know, be a little bit more gentler with him." George said, "Fuck that." He says, if you don't do what this program tells you to do, you will go back to where you came from. If you don't go to meetings, if you don't work the steps, if you don't get into service, if you don't give back to the newcomers and have a power for yourself, you ain't going to stay here, dude. So don't waste my time. If you want to go have coffee and go to the donut shop in the morning and bullshit around, we can do that. But if you're serious about this program and what we just talked about, then I'll sponsor you. He didn't tell me sometimes on Tuesdays and, you know, take Thursday off. And he said, get busy, man. Start working the steps. And I took it serious because, you know, I had a lot of experience with being told what to do. You know, told me when to get up, when to go to breakfast, when to go to the bathroom, when to go to work, when to come home from work, when to go to shower. You know, so I had a lot of experience with being told what to do. So when you guys paid me into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, the door started open. I had George B. as a sponsor. We started working steps. Every time I worked a step, another door opened. I felt a little bit better about myself. A little bit better, man. I worked another step. I felt better, man. I went to a meeting. And I feel even better about that. My life started to change. I started to see people clean that I knew and go to meetings. And their lives was changing. And just all these doors started opening. It was like a mad dash to get clean. I found out that the more that I did, the more better I felt about myself, the cleaner I felt about myself, and my life was changing, and everything was getting good, and I'd get into service, I'd go to an event, and talk to some people, and see some old friends, and they were clean too, and that impressed me, and kind of like made me more tenacious about this thing called recovery. And I got to the other side, and the doors continued to keep opening up, but my life got better. I think I'm ready to share now. You know, I talked about that thing where God kind of puts your arms around you and kind of comforts you and makes you feel comfortable and everything just feels okay. I've been to that place many, many times, man. Sharing about some of the stuff. I'm a big advocate of H&I. Is anybody here does H&I work? Hospitals and institutions? I've been doing H&I work this August to be 14 years. Continually doing, I've had clearance at the facilities that I go into for 14 years straight, August will be 14 years. Big part of my recovery. I believe that recovery is like this gift. And I kind of view it as this, like this orb, this ball. God-given gift. God gave me the gift to recover. I put a meaning in there. It shines a little bit brighter. I worked a step, like all those doors that I was going through, man. I got this gift of recovery, man. I put it up on the shelf and I set it up there because I don't want nobody to fuck with it. I don't want nobody causing any chaos and knocking it off the shelf and breaking my recovery. I don't allow people into my life that's going to cause a bunch of chaos and confusion and stuff and all that toxic crap. So I keep my recovery way up over here, man, so nobody fucks with it. And I take it down, I put another meeting in there, man. I put another service commitment in there. I work with another newcomer. I work a step with a newcomer. I have learned so much from the newcomer since I've been clean. And I take my recovery and I put it out of the way so it doesn't get damaged or someone upsets it. I treat it as a valuable gift given to me by God. So going into H&I, you know, for a long period of time, I've been doing that meeting. I go in there and share with the men. I bring men in there and they share their experience with these guys. And a lot of these guys have never heard about Narcotics Anonymous, like myself, not knowing that addicts can get clean and having that experience and bringing people in there and sharing about that. And for the first time in their using life, they see people actually getting clean. You know, and a lot of times I would get asked, you know, especially when I was doing this early on, I would get asked if I would sponsor them. And doing H&I work, we know that we can't sponsor an inmate that we go into the same pod because of confidentiality and the, you know, the sponsorship thing. And it's not a good idea to sponsor someone in the place where you go in to do your H&I meeting. So I never did that. And I'd have to tell them, well, I can't do that. And I feel so bad about, because I want to help them, right? They're like, you can see the light starting to go on in their eyes. And all they need is just somebody to kind of like keep that little light burning and make it a little bit brighter. And sponsorship is a good way to do that. And I couldn't do that. I was part of our region. I was the representative for San Jose going to our regional meeting and representing San Jose at our regional meeting. Like I say, we come from a big region. We've got 21 areas in our region and spread out over Northern California. And at that time, they were talking about at the regional meeting that they wanted to start an inmate sponsorship program through the mail. And we had all these different guidelines from different areas that already had established letter writing programs. So we took all these guidelines and we're looking at them. And I was thinking, you know, I get asked a lot of times in the facilities that I go in to sponsor people, what if we were to do that in my own area? And my thought was that when that addict that requested sponsorship, and you're able to give them a P.O. box and have them write to this P.O. box so there's no direct communication between the sponsor and the inmate, that when they got out of the facility close by, because we have a lot of facilities right there, jails and the farm and the main jail and women's facilities and stuff, and that addict would already have a go-between to meetings. They'd already know somebody. They'd already have an established relationship. They'd have a sponsor already in Narcotics Anonymous. So when they got released from that neighboring facility, they'd have somebody to take them to meetings, take them to their home room, introduce them to the fellowship. So I don't know how it was for you guys when you got out and went to meetings or the first meeting you went to, how uncomfortable that feels, not knowing anybody. I don't know if anybody ever had that experience. It can be a very awkward situation. Very awkward situation. I was in a newcomer workshop one time in recovery house, and this little black girl that was about 18 years old was telling me how uncomfortable she felt being out of place with all these old guys and her being, you know, black and young, and how uncomfortable it felt for her to be in that meeting. And I looked at her and I said, you know what? I felt the same way. But I'm not a little black 18-year-old girl, you know. And I felt uncomfortable also. So I got to thinking about this letter writing, this sponsorship program to the mail, and how important it would be to implicate it in the area level so that addict would get out and go to meetings and have somebody take them to meetings and not feel so uncomfortable. And maybe they'd stay. So we did that. I went back to region and told them, you know what, you guys do what you want, but we're going to take this thing and we're going to implicate it at our area. And that's what we did. And we formed a little group. And we had about four or five people. We started putting this thing together. We wanted a little flyer that went into the jail. That's the first thing we needed to do. We needed to recruit some sponsees. And we sent one out to the fellowship to recruit some sponsors. We got a P.O. box so the mail could go transaction through a P.O. box so there was no direct communication between addict and sponsor. So we worked really, really hard on this flyer, the one that went into the jails, man. We wanted this like black text, old English across the top on an arc, man, and a banner and stuff that said, inmate sponsorship program. No, we want it down here on the lower thing, a different case lettering, a different font over here. We want the NA symbol up. No, we want the NA symbol down here. Put the service symbol here. No, put the service symbol in the middle and make this writing this way, say this, change that, do this, put it together, take it apart, put it back together, put this over here. And we did that, man. And we came to a group conscience, but that's how we do it in Narcotics Anonymous. If you've ever been a part of one of these service committees, you know what I'm talking about. But that's how we do it. Everybody has an opinion. If you've got a group of 10 people, you've got 10 different opinions, and everybody has a right to be heard in Narcotics Anonymous. So we came out with this flyer, man. This flyer was perfect. It was perfect. So we sent it into jail. We sent one out to the fellowship and got some sponsors writing in and some inmates wanting some sponsorship. We started doing this thing for about 2 years, man. It was working really, really good, man. We had some people being sponsored by women were sponsoring the women, men were sponsoring the men, going through the P.O. box, and this thing was happening. And we had a letter writing coordinator that would go to the P.O. box, pick up the mail, and do all the distributing of the, making sure the sponsor got the right sponsees mail and all that stuff. And it was working really good for about 2 years. And at the our HNI subcommittee, the coordinator come in and, you know, they give a little report. Okay, we're sponsoring 36 men in these facilities. We've got 35 women being sponsored at this facility, and it's working real good and everything. And then one afternoon, we meet on Thursday at 6:30, the first Wednesday of every month. And the letter writing coordinator came in, and she gave a report, and she held up this one letter. She had this one letter, and she was holding like this. I said, we got a letter from New York. Now, I don't know if you know the logistics of the United States, but California's on the East Coast, or West Coast, and New York is on the West Coast, East Coast, somewhere. I don't even know what that is. It's on two separate coasts with a whole lot of land in between. But somehow, that flyer that we worked so hard on, that we spent so much time and energy and forming a group conscience on that flyer, had made it all the way to the East Coast. And I don't know if you've ever been in jail, you know how mail travels through the jail, man. It's in someone's pocket, in someone's property, and they're transferred here and over here and over here. But all the way to the East Coast, that flyer got over there. And when it got there, it fell into the hands of an addict. In desperation, he was seeking help from another addict in sponsorship. When that coordinator held up that letter and said that we got a letter from New York, I could just envision the whole deal of how that happened. How that addict was sitting there and for the first time in their whole life probably experienced a little bit of hope. As someone on the other side of the United States was thinking about it, was reaching out their hand to them. And I have found out that when an addict reaches their hand out, we need to be there to take that hand and pull them through. Because if we don't, we may lose that addict. And I don't want to lose one of you. So when she held up that letter, you don't know how proud I felt to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. How proud I felt to be part of it. And that program has grown. And I've taken that thing, me and my wife have taken that thing all over California. We've implicated, there's a lot of letter writing programs taking place, sponsorship behind the walls program started. I've actually put it into a PD PowerPoint presentation, because I've done it so many times, I just want to be consistent so that whenever we do it, it's the same thing every time, to give the information to any part of the fellowship that wants to partake in that thing. Very important stuff, man. Very important stuff. And like I said, I felt so proud to be a part of it, that I was part of the thing that implicated that. I get phone calls and they say, hey Lance, I heard you started a letter for the sponsorship behind the wall program. I told you, we need to get this straight. I did not start the letter writer for the sponsorship behind the wall program. I was a part of the group. It may have been my idea to do it area level, but I was part of a group that implicated that thing. Like Jimmy Kennedy says, no big eyes and no little wees. And when that happened, when that correspondence coordinator held up that letter, once again I was surrounded with that shroud from God that just made me feel a part of this thing. That I'd done something positive for another addict. Probably for a long time in my life. Like I said, I've been able to experience that many, many times in my time being clean. There was, I got a letter one time. I attend the area service. Sometimes I kid about the area service meeting being my home group. I've attended the area service like 12, 13 years. I haven't voted to that body in quite some time. I've gone through all this stuff. I was part of the admin, as a chair, vice chair, regional committee member and all that stuff. But I go to participate. I'm interested in what's going on in my area, so I participate. I go there to participate. I don't hold any election or position or not a GSR or anything like that. I just go to participate and be part of the process, be part of the information sharing part. So a lot of times when I go to the area service meeting and we have a P.O. box and a letter will come from one of the institutions or something to our P.O. box, they usually give me the letter and says, you know, Lance, read this letter and see what needs to be done with it. If it's an inmate requesting some literature, maybe send them a meeting guide and some literature or something, or if it's for the letter writing for the sponsorship, give it for those people. So I read this one letter one time. It came from this guy, I'm going to call him Chris W. He came from a prison. The letter came from a prison that's not too far from my area, probably about 90 miles or so, a prison called Vacaville, Solano. And it said, the NA meetings have stopped here in Solano State Prison. Can you send me some books, literature? Can you come in and speak? Or some CDs, speaker CDs. And he gave me a contact information, because if you have inside of one of the prisons in California, I think in the United States, you have somebody, a free person, which is a free person that works in a laundry or something like that. He's like a teacher or something. And he sponsors the meeting that takes place inside the prison. So he gave me this guy's contact information and told me to write to him if I had anything that I could send him. I wrote a letter back saying, we don't have a budget for books. We can't send any literature. We have specific literature we take into our meetings and stuff. I can't come in and speak because I have state clearance and I go into San Quentin State Prison, so I can't go into the other prison. But I do have some CDs. I collect CDs. I collect speaker CDs from all over the place. I got a massive collection of CDs. So I put together this little package. I put together 10 CDs of some of my favorite ones. You know, the Kalish, the Brenda Bees, and John Anderson, and all them people, you know, my favorites. And I put this package together, and I sent it to this free person inside the prison, and he got it to the inmates. And I get another letter from this guy, and he says, you know what? All the addicts inside this Solano State Prison have listened to these CDs 4 times. Can you send some more? So very, very easy thing to do. I didn't have to do anything. I just went in and burned some more CDs of some of my favorites, put them in a little package, put some stamps on it, put it in the mailbox. The mailman picked it up, took it off. I didn't have to do nothing. I didn't have to leave the house. Didn't even have to leave the house. Did it right in my nice chair. You know? So we had our big regional convention, NCCNA, and I was part of the host committee. I was in charge of all the volunteers. Now, to put on a convention with 10,000 people takes a lot of volunteers. So I was the person in charge of all the volunteers. You know, I had to gather them, help gather them, and then had to disperse them out to the different committees, merchandise, registration, blah, 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 and make sure that everybody had volunteers to put this thing on. And our convention starts on Thursday, goes around the clock, 24 hours, all the way up to Sunday afternoon is the last meeting. I was there from Thursday when the convention started at 12 noon, and I was supposed to be at a table directing volunteers. That was my duties. And I was there from Thursday. I got to go home Thursday. We go home at night because we have marathon meetings going on around the clock when nobody's there at the convention center, and that needs to go to a meeting. There's always a meeting there. So it was Saturday morning. It was about 7:30. At that time, the convention's real quiet. There's just a few people milling around, going to different meetings and walking through the lobby of the main convention center and stuff. And I was sitting there at the table. I just got there, and I was there with one of my sponsees, Danny G. And we're sitting there talking, and all of a sudden, this guy started walking up to me. Now, if you've been to some of these places, you know when someone's coming up to you kind of aggressive. And he walked up and he had this kind of mean look on his face and walked up to me and he says, so you're Lance, aren't you? He looked at me kind of like that. I said, oh, shit, what's, you know. And I'd been clean a while. You know, I'd been clean 16, 17 years. And I hadn't burned anybody in a long time. I hadn't stolen anything from anybody. So it was an awkward thing that was happening right there. Because I could tell when someone was being confrontational, I guess. He said, well, so you're Lance, aren't you? I said, yes, I am. Welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. Welcome to the NCCA convention. Can I help you with something? He said, no, I just want to thank you for those CDs. just like I'm feeling right now, I felt the same way. And so did he. And we just hugged each other and sat there and cried. And the reason he was so confrontational, he just got out of that place. And still had a lot of those attitudes and behaviors and stuff. You know how good it felt to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And like I said, when an addict reaches out that hand, I need to be there to take that hand. Even if it's as simple as a little packet of CDs from my easy trip. The reward that I got from that, the feel good that I got from that, what can I say? Priceless. And for probably the first time in my life that I'd done something for another person and got to experience the reward. You know, we don't do things expecting a reward. We do that selflessly. But sometimes the payback for that selflessness, you can't put a price tag on it. I can't even describe it. Best I can describe it is God putting his arms around me and comforting me and telling me, good job. I'm a firm believer in the third step. You know, when I work the steps of the sponsee, we get to that third step, we pound that thing like an old car. We work that third step. We make sure we have that third step down before we move on. Because a lot of times, you know, in my experience in Narcotics Anonymous, when my H and I meeting, I'm supposed to go do my H and I meeting on Friday night. You know, I'd rather be at home with a clicker watching UFC or something. You know, but my power tells me, you know, Lance, you got a commitment to do. You need to go do your commitment. You need to go to the area service meeting. You need to go to your home group tonight. You need to do this. You need to do this for Narcotics Anonymous. You have asked me to take your will and your life and show you what to do, and I'm showing you what to do. So it's really nothing about me. It's nothing, you know, sending that pack of CD. I didn't do that. God did that. God told me to do that. Had nothing to do with me. Had nothing to do with me. So a lot of times, you know, I've been able to experience that. And if you're not getting that in your recovery, I'm sorry. I'm going to continue to do. I haven't changed anything in my recovery from June 21st, 1992, when I decided to get clean. See, when I decided to get clean, I hadn't gotten arrested. I went to jail. I went on to places I usually go back to. But I went there with a whole different train of thought. I wanted to do something different with my life. I had heard that addicts were recovering from the disease of addiction, and I wanted to find out about that. So when I got there, I sought out people that had some information about Narcotics Anonymous. I went to San Quentin State Prison. I was an inmate there, and I was seeking people that had some information about Narcotics Anonymous. And there were some of the teachers there that had some information about meetings, about what they do at meetings, and how the program works, and how the process works. And I sought those people out, and they took an interest in me. They seen that Lance was trying to do something different for the first time in his life. The other inmates didn't like it. And that was a very humbling experience for me, to go back to a place like that and change and do something different. But this one teacher really seen that I was trying to change, do something different. And she used to work with me. She told me one day, you know what, Lance, make a list of all the things you don't like about yourself. Make a list of all the things that you feel aren't going to be conducive to recovery. So I had on her, I had anger, I had racism, I had prejudice, I had violence, jealousy, and all that ugly, ugly stuff. And it kind of makes my stomach feel a little queasy even mentioning it today. But that's the stuff that I had inside of me. And that teacher told me, she's going to prioritize that stuff in the order that you'd like to change it.
And up on the top of it was like my prejudice, some of my beliefs surrounding that stuff. Hatred, and violence, and anger. You know, those were like way up on the top of the priorities. And I started working on that stuff. She told me, don't wait till the day before you go home to do that stuff. Start on it now. So that's what I did. I started working on that stuff, and it was almost like working the steps, but it really wasn't. But it was the opportunity to do some a little bit of work on myself. And thank God for that. Because I was in this little classroom. They had a substance abuse class ran by this lady named Nancy Hedke. And anytime anything was going on in that institution, they made sure that I was down there to be able to listen to what was going on. If a speaker came in, or H and I came in, or something like that, I got the opportunity to go down there and sit in on that, whatever was going on. And so one afternoon, the teacher that I worked for got a call, and I went down there, and they sent me down to the room, and I'm sitting in the middle of this classroom, and this guy walks in. Now, I knew who this person was. I had been someplace prior, a few years prior to this happening, with this guy. I knew what this gentleman was about. I knew what he was capable of doing. And to see him walk in that door with a suit on was pretty impressive. And I don't know what he told them other people in that room that day. There was 40 other inmates sitting in that room. But it was like he was looking directly at me. And he told me, if you go to Narcotics Anonymous meetings, if you get a sponsor in Narcotics Anonymous, work the 12 steps in Narcotics Anonymous, have a power greater than yourself and get into service, you too can stay clean. That's pretty good. That's what he told me. And like I told you about that little list that I made, and I started working on that stuff. I heard the message. I had a very clear message from Narcotics Anonymous from a 6'2" black man from East Palo Alto. Had I not worked on that little list, and when that man walked into that room seeing who he was and what he was about, I probably wouldn't have listened to what he had to say. I probably would have looked the other way and not listened to what he had to say, and I probably wouldn't be clean today. So I learned two very valuable lessons that day. I learned the importance of doing some personal work on personal issues. Because I worked on my prejudice. I worked on my anger. I did a little work on my hatred. And when that black man walked in and talked about going to meetings and Narcotics Anonymous, I heard what that man had to say. And I'm still clean today. And I learned the importance of carrying a clear message of Narcotics Anonymous. Because if he would have told me that I had to recover from two diseases and that I had to do all this other stuff, I probably wouldn't have listened to what he had to say, and I probably wouldn't be clean today. So I learned the importance of carrying a clear message of Narcotics Anonymous, because I was that addict, that one addict in that room that needed to hear it that way. I needed to hear it that way. So when I do my H&I meeting, I make sure that, you know, I know that probably most of the people in my H&I meeting will get clean and hear any kind of message, but there might be that one addict. There might be that one addict that needs to hear it. If you go to Narcotics Anonymous meetings, if you get a sponsor of Narcotics Anonymous and work the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous, get into service, have power greater than yourself, you too will stay clean. Mine's last one.